11LRNI.
Now the lights dim low, soon we'll start the show.
Here comes LF Network.
Jett and the Blackhearts on the Midwood Files. I don't think I don't know if I've ever played anything that passes for a Christmas production where I didn't use that particular version of the song. You know, I've looked around and that's been covered. I'm not getting levels I like. That's been covered more than a few times by more than a few people, even crossing over into the quote unquote punk genre. And none of them have did not filled that as that little cadence thing that they got going on there that. I don't know how to explain it, but I love that version. So once again, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. This is going to be what passes for a Christmas show, which is basically going to entail me talking about my trip to New York, which was Christmassy in nature, I suppose. It was the annual 11L R&I staff dinner, which generally includes intimate staff members, but has in recent years gone to include anybody who's willing to show up, apparently. Quite interesting. And this year we had Hank and Jim down, and you know, it was also Hank and Jim's, 43rd anniversary broadcasting, I think that sounds about right. Even they'd be hard pressed to tell you exactly what it was 43 years of, because I've asked, but it was 43 years of something from the first time they did something. Okay. And they know each other longer than 43 years. So it wasn't the first time they met, that much I know. So, yeah, it was kind of a cross celebration thingamajiggle going on there. And it was pretty cool, I got to honestly say. You know, Christmas, for me, for the most part, is more Dickens-esque. Is that a new word for the week? Actually, I don't even think that's a new word. Around here, anyway, for the most part, you know, a little cold, a little drafty. A little coal in the stocking, you know, standard stuff. So this year, I had actually, and I know some of you might have heard some of this if you've listened to John Lightning's show last Sunday, which I was fortunate enough to be part of, but there isn't going to be a total reiteration, so it won't be totally boring for you. But, so I heard from Alan Zane that Hank and Jim were going to be there this year. I was speaking to him about a week or so before the actual dinner, you know, which was on the Saturday the 15th. Of December, so it must have been maybe the 10th or so I was talking to him, and he said it was going to be pretty interesting given the mixture of people who were going to be involved. So I was like, oh really, do tell. So he explained that Hank and Jim were invited and supposed to be coming, so I was like, ooh, you have to tell me how that turns out, right? So I think I wound up speaking to JL like a week or not even like maybe 3 or 4 days later, and I said, you know, you got to let me know how that turns out, because I'm really interested given the chemistry, you know. And he said, well, I want you to come down. And I was like, I got the producer's going to have that knee replacement in a couple, like on the 20th. And I'm trying to get some money away so when she's taking some time off and we don't have to worry about it. And he's like, don't worry about it. Come down on my dime. So I was like, I was still a little, because I wasn't really sure how much it was going to cost, you know. So I did a little research and it turned out to be not that bad. Not as bad as I thought it was. So I called him back and I said, yeah, I'll definitely come down. But I said I don't want to come down if Gymnasium's not coming down. So he was like, well, as far as I know, he's supposed to be coming. So I'm like, yeah, but that's not the same as like a, you know, an actual yes, I'm coming. So I called him, got right off the phone with John Lightning, and I called Gymnasium, and I said, look, here's the deal. I'm not going to come all the way down from New England. You know, it's like 180, 200 miles. I gotta sit on buses with people, and it's just all sorts of stuff that we would never consider doing as sane individuals if you're not going to show. So I said, yeah, you know, and it worked a little bit. And, I felt bad because I was putting him on the spot. But, you know, I was like, I wanted some sort of definitive yes or no, so I knew what to do. So he said yes. I got off the phone with him saying yes, and my presumption is that he would hitch a ride with Hank Hayes, who was supposed to be coming. So I was like, all right, so apparently now all I have to do is make sure that Hank Hayes puts Gymnasium in the car when he comes, right? That sounds easy enough, right, you would think. So I call Hank and I leave a message. And I don't get no call back, you know. But he was busy that week. I think he was shooting his third and final extra appearance on Gotham. I think Gotham's done. I think they've finished. It's the last season, and I think he'd been on more than once. I think it's 3 times, if I'm correct. He's quite prolific, is he not? So it was like, yeah. I left a message, and I didn't hear from him. So then I messaged him. I left him a voicemail on his cell. And then I didn't hear nothing. But like I said, it was kind of a wonky week for him. And then I messaged him on Messenger, and he messages me back. Now, and I say, here's the deal. Load Gymnasium in the car when you come. It was that simple. So he's like, well, if it's good with him, then fine. So I'm like, yeah. He said, yeah, he's in. So, and that's where it was left off. So I booked tickets. I made my plans. I went to the pharmacy, and I got extra dosages of all the stuff that's, like, really important. And everything was good. Okay, great. So then, as it approaches closer to the day, of me actually leaving, which would have been, I guess, I left that Friday. But I stayed up from that Thursday morning because most people know I'm usually up to 5 or 6 or 7 in the morning. It would have been 8 o'clock or 8:30 bus. It didn't make sense to go to sleep, so I just stayed up. So we packed me some sandwiches, and I threw some stuff into my suitcase. Yes, my same. I should take a picture of this suitcase sometime. Maybe I'll put it up on Instagram. This is the same suitcase that I had. I hate to say it, when I had when I was arrested. So this suitcase has been to Amsterdam with me. Nope, multiple. You could probably get a contact eye just from sniffing real hard on this suitcase. Just to let you know. So it's really dinged up too. So I threw some stuff in there, and I threw some stuff into my backpack, knapsack, whatever you want to call it, and I was, like, waiting for the worst. I was waiting for things to, like, go kapooey for me, you know? So I'm on the bus, and I'm hearing from this one, and I'm hearing from that one, and yes, no, yes, no. It's like, it was like the weather report. It was like, you know, like, again, I think I made reference to when I called into a gymnasium show last night. I said, it's like, it was like getting a rocket launched. You know, you got to make sure all the weather's good and the wind's blowing in the right direction and all that other stuff, you know? So, I get there and, harrowing experience. I took a local, out of Providence because it was early. I think the expresses ran later and I didn't want to get in that late to Manhattan. Because it didn't make sense to me to be dealing with all that rush hour traffic, considering I'm almost probably partly psychotic. So I didn't figure it was a good idea. The whole trip, I looked like I was about to hit somebody with an axe. You know how, like, you know, when you see someone who's about to hit somebody with an axe, that's what I looked like. So, you know, people gave me a wide berth, which was, like, really good. But I did look scary. I was the scary guy. I was indeed. But I was scared. That's why I was scary. So I'm out early to the bus stop at Providence. And at Providence, it's a bus stop. It's not really a bus station. There's like an office where they sell tickets, and then there's outside, and then the buses come one at a time to this one spot, and you get on and you get off or whatever you're doing your business, and then it goes. There's no, it's not a terminal or a station or a terminus or any of that. No. Providence is really it. So I was an hour early, and there was a place to be inside. So I was inside a little, and then I was outside, and then I was inside, and then I was outside, and then my bus finally showed up. So, you know, which was really good. So I got on my bus, and like I said, it was scheduled to make every stop between Providence and New York that was possible. If there was a stop to be at, if there was a stop that they discontinued back in 1939 that somehow managed to sneak onto someone's little piece of paper somewhere, it was on that goddamn schedule. It stopped there. So when you're making that many stops, you're bound to lose time. So I think it was supposed to be 6 hours, I think, right around 6 hours, and which is normally a 4 hour, three, and with a bus, you know, the way buses go, it's about 4 hours and whatnot. It should be straight run, so it was 6 with all the extra stops, but we picked up like 2 hours. So it was literally like 8 hours. I spent like 8 hours on this bus. Let me get that straight. 8 hours on this bus. And it had Wi-Fi, but it had pretty crappy Wi-Fi. So I used my data because, you know, the data on my phone, which was great. But I was worried about my phone battery running out because I didn't see any receptacles. They call them receptacles. Who has a receptacle? They call them receptacles where you're supposed to plug in your phone for power and whatnot. So I was afraid I was going to run out of power before I got to New York if I actually used it for anything that was of interest to me, like, say, Netflix or YouTube or anything like that. So I figured I'd use the time constructively, and I listened to the last two John Lightning shows. So at least I would have some idea as to what he was babbling about when I got there, you know. always a good thing to do as a guest, you know. So I rolled into New York. I think we were supposed to get here at 2:30. I rolled into New York. It was like 4:30 when we got into Penn Station. Or it wasn't Penn Station. I always say that. 4:30 I rolled into Port Authority. So went from Port Authority, got the one train. Didn't even have to go pop up and look. I knew where I was going. The one train. Took the one train to South Ferry. The one train itself was a local. So I was like, The only good thing is that when I got to South Ferry, I walked right up. You go up the stairs, and there's the Staten Island Ferry thing. And I got sniffed by the doggies. They did a good sniff on the bag because it was big enough to blow up a ferry, I suppose. Again, I did give off the axe murderer vibe, so I can't really complain about being stopped. So they stopped me, they sniffed me, I got the sniff test approval from the German Shepherd. And I walked right into a ferry, which was really good timing because I think they're every half hour or something or another. So I would have been standing there for a half hour, standing there for like 5 minutes. Walked into a ferry on the lower deck. Of course, it was like raining, so I couldn't go out on the upper deck at all. I mean, I could, but I didn't want to. And I was too far away from friggin' like Statue of Liberty, and it was like dusky to really get any effective pictures of anything. Kind of a little blurry kind of deal. I was just going to, no one was going to go up on the internet and just like grab a picture of the Statue of Liberty and say that I took it, but I knew I'd get caught. I'm a bad liar, so I don't do stuff like that. So I get over to the other side of the ferry, which is St. George's, and poof, I'm there. I'm like, I'm in Staten Island, yay! So they have like a little subway. It's not like a big subway. It's like a little subway. It's like a little branch line. And you actually even transfer over if you paid. The ferry is free. And if you paid when you got off from the subway on the other side, you can get on this thing as a transfer, which was pretty cool. The one thing I was mad about is my Metro card that I had from the last time I was down there was like expired. So when I had money on there, and they're like, oh, here's the, because I gave her the card to put money on it. And she's like, oh, this is expired. And it was money on it. So, you know, she had that the woman in the booth had that terrified look on her face, you know, because I'm giving off the axe murderer vibe. So she hates to, like, get like bad news. It's like, yeah, there's money on here, but it's expired, so you can't use it. What do you want to do? It was just like, what do you want to do? I was like, okay, let's relax. I go, okay, you're in a booth. I can't really do anything. You know what I'm saying? So I said, give me a new card. So she says, here's what, I'll give you your old card back with an envelope that you can send. And then I'm like, you know what? Okay, you know where to put that, right? Great. Okay, just give me a new card. So they gave me a new card, and it was like this green chintzy looking thing. It wasn't like the yellow MTA thing. I think I don't know if I still have the yellow MTA thing that's expired. I should have kept it because they might not be putting those out anymore. So I got on the right train, and I got off on the right stop, but I didn't remember where to go. Once I was off the train stop, so I had to call him. This was the all-important come-get-me phone call that I wanted to save my battery for on my phone. So I said, come get me, and it turns out I was like a block from the house that the station is, maybe a block and a half diagonally. So he came, he got me, we were talking, got into the house. Yammer, yammer, yammer. I called the producer to let him know that I was alive, which is always good. And we were just hanging out and talking. And remember, this is now still on Friday. So, I mean, for two guys that hadn't seen each other in a long while, we were talking a whole lot. You know, he gets behind the board where he does the show from, and I'm sitting on the love seat in the living room. There's only a love seat in the living room, and then there's a love seat in the other living room. So it's kind of... I there's enough pictures of that place floating around. If someone were really interested, they could probably figure out what I'm talking about. But I'm not going to do a breakdown of the interior of John Lightning's house. Needless to say, it's immaculate. I mean, he keeps the place immaculate in only a way that a person who suffers from OCD to his level could. So it's like the exact opposite of where I live. So I went from the most chaotic environment you can be in to probably one of the most restrictive environments I could be in. If I could find somewhere between those two polars, I'd probably be like happy. Happy. Let me see if this coffee is still scalding hot. I'm going to say honestly, and she knows I'm going to say it, the producer made the worst cup of coffee that she's ever made for me ever early today. But she's high on drugs, so. It's still hot. I don't taste any sugar at all. So we're hanging out, and I say to him, you know, and I'm in New York now, so I go, I says to him, I moved my bag upstairs. And I got my little bag with me with some stuff. And I really didn't bring, like, last time, I think I was 5 days or something. This time was just electronics, you know, basic stuff, my phone, my 10-inch tablet, the food that I was eating, and power cords. I think that's really all I brought with me. Oh, and my sleep mask. I stuck that in the little bag that I, you know, because you got to check your big bag on Greyhound, and they let you bring one bag on. So I mean, maybe if I actually did manage to think about getting some, so I sleep with a sleep mask. I don't know if I've told people this before, but I got into the habit when I was flying to Europe a lot to be able just to put the sleep mask on and shut things out. So even in, not for nothing, even in prison, I had one. I had some make one for me that I had to hide because it was contraband. I went through three of them, but that's not bad. I guess once every 6 months or so. So we're talking, and I'm like, you know what, John? I want to smoke some weed. Do you have any weed? And I knew he had weed. So, because he's always talking about having weed stashed away. So it's like, yeah, no problem. So I'm like, you're going to smoke with me? Because I never smoked with John before. I never smoked with JL. I've smoked around him. I can't even tell you how much. I mean, lots and lots and lots from the old days with Edwin Armstrong. And then certainly more than a few times later on after whatever, and it was just us hanging out, I'd still smoke in there. I remember when I could smoke Marlboros in that apartment. Wow, the old days, you know? Towards the end, they used to kick you to the curb. Yeah, go outside and smoke that cigarette. You're going to kill me with that secondhand smoke. I'm like, all right. But yes, the man had weed, and he had pretty good weed, I might add. So I'm sitting on the couch, and he's like, yeah, smoke, don't worry, go slow, smoke, and we'll smoke, I think maybe on Sunday. Because I said, you know what, I didn't want to smoke, like, on Saturday, because I'm going to be, like, with people, and I didn't know how I was going to react, and I'm still taking my psych meds, and we were going to be in a restaurant, and I'm like, you know what, the last thing I need is for something to go really seriously wrong by smoking on Saturday. And he's right, I agree with you. So, smoke tonight, don't smoke anything tomorrow. And then we'll both smoke on Sunday. We'll smoke, like, in the last hour of the show or whatever. So I was like, cool. All right. It's fine. We get to smoke with John Lightning. Awesome. And in the meantime, I get to get a little stoned. Now, you got to remember, I got to be, let's see. If I actually broke this down, and I know I'm reiterating this story, but I never tell the same story the same way twice. I'm almost like the Grateful Dead in that manner. So even those of you who have heard it, you know, perhaps find some level of giggleness in what I'm about to say. So he's got this little clay pipe. And he gives loads of bowl, a small bowl. And it's like a two-hit bowl, you know? So, and it would be a one-hit for, like, a normal-type person. But I hadn't smoked weed in, man, when's the last time I smoked weed? I think I've taken probably two hits of some really decent weed in the last 10 years. I'm here 10 years in Rhode Island, 10 years, and I remember smoking once. What's that? I'm going to say that one more time. Smoked two hits of decent weed, which knocked me on my ass, I might add, in the last 10 years. So my tolerance, and that was 5 years ago. So my tolerance is, like, ridiculously low. I mean, I smoked relatively often in Texas, but once we hit New England, not so much. So I knew I had a super low tolerance, and so did everybody I talked to. Everybody I talked to, you know, I said, I was going to be, it's like, don't hit on the weed. Don't, just a little bit. Take it easy. How you feel? A little bit. And I'm like, okay, fine. And one or two of you who shall remain nameless said, don't mess with the extracts or the edibles or anything strong. Nothing, just no oils, just smoke your weed, smoke your flower, be a happy camper, everything will be fine. So I was like, eh. So I figured I'd just follow that advice, right? So I'm smoking now, and John's not smoking, and we're still talking, and it's really cool because I'm forgetting everything that I was going to say every 4 or 5 minutes. I just can't hold on to it, and it floats away, and it's kind of amusing for John. And we're still smoking, and I'm still smoking. We're hanging out, and we eat a little something, which was nice. Best damn fried rice I ever had, as a matter of fact. And, you know, it gets to a point where it's like, we had to go outside. This was really kind of interesting. He's got this he's got this work crew that apparently comes in, you know, from the city and whatnot, that comes in, I guess it's Monday through Friday, and they come in, like, after, like, 11 or something. It's insane. It's like the midnight to 8 shift or something, where at midnight they start tearing up the street. I kid you not, with jackhammers and, you know, the big boom, 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 the earth movers and the whole nine yards, you know. And what they do is apparently they dig up the pipe, jackhammer up the pipe, break the street up, move the stuff aside, either change or do whatever they're doing to the pipe, and then cover the pipe back up and then pack it back down. They pound it back down with the bucket of these earth movers, of these, you know, little, I guess they're little cranes. They're little baby cranes, you know. I think you know what I'm talking about. I hope, anyway. And that's insane. And he told me, and I was like, yeah. And I think it was already stoned when he told me. And I was like, get out of here. And then we're sitting there, and I'm like, you hear it. And you're like, what the fuck is that? I don't know how else to describe it. I think even if I was totally straight sitting in that room, and I'd heard that noise, all of a sudden I would have been like, what the fuck is that? So I would imagine even being stoned, you know. For all I know, it could have been a dragon, for all I knew, you know. It's like, oh, my God. So he says, no, that's the work crew. And I'm like, get out of here. And he goes, no, really. And we walk outside and go see him. They're like up the street, like half a block away. So I'm like, holy smokes. So, I mean, it's not really bothering me once I knew what it was. It's definitely irritating John, though. I can tell you that much. J.L. was irritated, as apparently he has been for the last X number of months that they've been doing this. So I would come back in, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to get ready to go to sleep, but I'm going to, like, I want to take, like, one, like, maybe one or two more hits and then go upstairs and go to sleep. So he's like, fine. And he's got his whole box down, you know, so he's got his little, two little, like, containers, I guess the little silicone containers they look like. One type of weed and the other type of weed, and I was smoking one of those, and I didn't want to mix because I have problems when I do that sometimes. Believe it or not, it's really weird, just like alcohol. Don't believe me? Ask Pinball Wizard. He will tell you. So I can't really do that too much. But he had a few vape pens, you know, with oil in them, and I could smell it because it was like on the table, like 2 feet in front of me, and it just had this, I guess that's what they call dank. That's what the kids call dank. Had this really dank smell to it. So I'm like, and apparently he had a few different ones, right? So I take my two hits, and he's like, you know, and he says, you know what I like to do right before I go to sleep, just to cap it off. I go, what? Yeah, I'm already stoned. I go, what? He goes, I like to take a hit off one of these vape pens. Because it's really, you know, sets it off nice. You walk away. So I'm like, all right. So, all right, I'll try it. So he picks up one of the vape pens, and he couldn't get it to work. You could see there was still oil in there, so it's nothing to do with the battery. Right, pulls up the second one, couldn't get that one to work. So now, by now, we're both, like, really emotionally involved in getting this friggin' thing to work, right? So he pulls up the third one. That one works, right? So he hands it to me. And he says, don't take a huge hit. Don't. Just take a little. Hold and then let go. And I pretty much did what he said. Believe me, I wasn't playing cowboy on any of this because I didn't want to wind up on my ass. Well, you know what wound up happening? I wound up on my ass. That vape pen, pretty much, and I'm going to use the same word I've used in the three times that I've told this story. I was pretty much instantly paralyzed. Now, I'm sitting on this love seat, and I go this way, and I'm, like, curl up like this, and it got to the point where he had to leave. It was, like, I don't know how long it was. He had a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. Finally, he says, that's it. I'm going upstairs to sleep. Because he figured either I would just sleep where I was, or I would eventually get up and go upstairs. So, I don't know how much longer after that. Maybe another hour and a half, 2 hours. I get up, but I feel nauseous. So I'm like, I had all my meds with me, and I keep them all. I got them in a plastic bag, which is actually kind of sad. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna throw my cookies. So like, what do? So I dump the meds out of the plastic bag, and I go into the kitchen, and I manage to make it into the kitchen, and I throw my cookies up in the plastic bag in the sink in the kitchen. So let start to go back to sit down. Drink a little water. Oh boy, what am I doing? What just happened? You know, collect myself, get myself together in the best fashion that I can. Now, I'm still wrecked. In the best fashion that I can, I managed to get over to the staircase, right? I get up, right, into the bedroom, and I'm in the guest room. I'm where I should be. I make sure I'm where I should be. I sit down. I clonk down like this, and I'm like, and I'm now like 15, 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden, boop, it pops into my head. Boop, I can't leave a bag of barf in this guy's sink. I mean, I might be able to leave a bag of barf in somebody's sink, okay? A couple of people that I know, they would just be like, they would just get the bag. But if I leave a bag of barf in this guy's sink, that's like, you know, that's the last time I'll ever be invited there. I know him. I know him too well. So I get up, and I go down the stairs, And it's neatly packaged. I mean, it's not like it's a mess or nothing. I just take the bag, and there were no holes. Luckily, there were no little pinholes or nothing in the bottom. Take the plastic bag, hold it. And the kitchen, there's a door to the outside right near the kitchen. So I outside the door, and I walk around the house. I'm so stoned. I walk around the perimeter of the house. Get this, like, at least four times looking for the regular trash bin. Not the recyclable bin, or not the bin that they pick up on Mondays when the purple squirrels are out. No, the regular fucking trash bin. I can't find it. Round and round and round. And then I see the neighbors as I go around. There's a neighbor's trash bin. But John's always talking about this goddamn yappy dog. So I'm saying to myself, all I need to do is get close enough to this house for this fucking yappy dog to start going at like 3:30 in the morning, and that's it. I'll be, all the lights will go on, and I'll be standing there holding a bag of puke. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Nope. Nope. Not me. So I eventually laid it in an appropriate place, okay? Went back in the house, locked the door behind me, got something to drink, went upstairs, and ironically enough, I ate the other two ham and sweet sandwiches that were in my bag from the bus, and then I went to sleep. Whew, my God, what an experience. You know, I had no idea that was going to happen. Not like that, anyway. Anyway, this looks like a good time to take a break. It's it's the bottom of the hour, so let me see if I can play a set real quick, and then be back after that. So, hold on.
Lavender Radio, wonderful R&I. We wish you a jingle Christmas.
Friends home. The news had come out in the First World War. The bloody Red Baron was flying once more. The Allied command ignored all of his men and called on stupid and do it again. 'Twas the night before Christmas, 40 below, when Snoopy went up in search of his foe. He spotted the Red Baron, fiercely they fought. With eyes on his wings, Snoopy knew he was caught. Christmas bells, those Christmas bells, ring out from the land, asking peace of all the world and goodwill to man. The Baron has Snoopy dead in his sights. He reached for the trigger to pull it tight. Why he didn't shoot, well, we'll never know. Or was it the bells from the village below? Christmas bells, those Christmas bells, ringing through the land, bringing peace to all the world and goodwill to man. The Baron is Snoopy, fly to the Rhine, and forced him to land behind the enemy lines. Snoopy was certain that this was the end, when the Baron cried out, Merry Christmas, my friend! The Baron then offered a holiday toast, and Snoopy, our hero, saluted his host. And then went through all, they were both on their way, each knowing they'd meet on some other day.
Count them three Christmas songs in an 8-minute set. Yeah, gotta love punk. Anyway, I don't even remember who that was. Let me see if I could even begin to... did I put that up here? Maybe I did. Let's see. I think Silent Night was the Dickies, who have covered everything under the sun. The Snow Miser song from the Year Without a Santa Claus, as opposed to the Heat Miser, was 45 Grave, and I think the Snoopy was Smash Mouth, believe it or not, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know. It didn't totally sound like Smash Mouth, but they've been known to sound a little bit less than the commercial pump confection that they've been known to turn, or pop confection that they've been known to turn out. So I figured I'd get in there. And the Snoopy song, for all you Snoopy fans out there, that's also one of my favorite Christmas songs ever, but for all you Snoopy fans out there, I know there are a couple of few of you, Noopy, as I used to call him when I was a child. Okay, we ID'd, we played some music. Let me get back to the song. So I woke up on Saturday with no apparent ill effects, which was really good. I was like super mega pleased about that. And John woke up earlier than I did. I think I went to sleep at like, I don't know, it had to be like 4. So I guess I got up like 11:30, something like that. So I hit the bathroom and then I headed downstairs. And I was on the couch from... around lunchtime to way after dinner. Because I think the plan was that people were supposed to start to assemble at John's after 5, because I think the reservations were like 8 something. So he was leaving plenty of time. So at that point in time, I still had no idea whether Gymnasium was arriving or not. So I was like, okay. And nobody seemed to know. And then at the last minute, Hank called and asked if Tina could come along, the lovely Tina Hayes, who's always fun. And so when I heard that, I was like pleased, because I'm like, oh, that's cool. But still no word on the other guy. So I was like, hmm. So I hit the shower about 4:30 or whatever. And most of that time between like 11:30 and 4:30, John's working on the show. He's getting stuff in the can. He's figuring out what he wants to use. And that process will continue into Sunday, as I will explain. So I believe the Hayeses are the first to show. So I was like, oh, no Gymnasium, huh? So I look at Hank and I'm like, you had one job. One job. One job you had. But it's like trying to herd a cat. I get that. I understand that. So I kind of had a... Even though I was breaking his chops a little bit, I couldn't really fully hold him responsible for. But that's it. I assumed that that's it. So I had, as I've said before, I think I said last night, I had started to emotionally prepare myself for there being no gymnasium. So I was like sad, but I was still glad to see people. So Dave and his son showed up. I hadn't seen Andy in like since he was 8, and now he's 30 and getting married in a year. So I'm like, oh, hi. And of course, Alan Sane and Jack Hammer of WMAD fame. I actually, at one point in time, tried to talk Jack Hammer into doing radio with Alan Sane again, but it was met with a poo-poo, so I'm not quite sure that's going to happen anytime soon. But you see, you never know, right? Life's short. Oh, wait, what happened here? Oh, it looks like I stopped streaming. Well, anyway, I'm not going to worry about that too much because I can't fix it while I'm in the middle of the show. I can, however, let's see. Take off. The equipment does a little, so I'll do a little edit there, and you never know what happens. So, as I was saying, and then that was pretty it for guests arriving. It was, you know, and I knew who was supposed to be there, and I counted the people just to make sure. And then I saw that, there was no, there was no gymnasium. So I'm like, meh. So we're hanging out and crack open a bottle of wine, and there's, you know, plenty of Mexico, and it's festive. I mean, it really is festive. I felt, you know, it was really cool. I knew the restaurant we were going to, and up until that point, everything had been okay with me as far as my my mental status, as they say. I mean, I'd been on edge, but I mean, I think that was like to be expected. I think I did real well dealing with the subway, which I thought was going to be the worst of it. And it's kind of funny, you know. You and I put a picture up on my Instagram, and it's kind of true. You just sink right back into, you know, it's, you, no matter how long you're away from New York City, you just, like, you hang out for a second, and you just sink right back into the rhythm of the city, and you're like, you flow with the city, and it's like, oh, yeah. So that happened. I mean, so I wasn't that far removed. I mean, it's the city of my birth. I was born in Manhattan, even, so, I was glad that I was able to, negotiate it in a manner that didn't require a trip to Bellevue, very much so, you know. I like to think that New York City cops trained to deal with, you know, bipolar and people who might be off their rails at any given moment, you know. But I don't know, because I haven't been in the city so long. So we're hanging and drinking wine, and we're talking, and believe there's plenty of this buzz, 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 people talking. And then all of a sudden, there's a ding-dong at the doorbell. And I'm like, I pretty much mowed Dave down to get to the door. And even JL saying, let him answer the door, let Lee answer the door. So I get to the door, and lo and behold, the gymnasium in all his glory. I'm like, and there's a glow. There's like a yellow, goldenish glow coming from him. And it's like, ah. So, you know, what a man, shake his hand, hi, how are you? And, you know, and a hug, you know, and scare him or nothing. And he made it. He made it. He, you know, the story was is that he thought it was earlier. I guess when he heard five, I guess he was thinking five at the restaurant and not five at John's, you know, JL's. So he decided, and he wasn't even feeling that great, but he checked himself out there for a little bit and decided that he was feeling well enough to make the trip. So he jumped in the gymnasium mobile, and boom, there he was. So we all hung out for about another, 45 minutes or so, and then we headed over to the restaurant, and I rode with Jim and Alan Sane and Jack Hammer. And it's cool. I know I mentioned it last night, and I made him mention it too, because it is cool. He's got his GPS. Whenever he goes by his GPS, it announces when he's going by a Dunkin' Donuts. It does. It's an audible. It's not a bing or nothing. It actually audibly says Dunkin' Donuts on the left, Dunkin' Donuts on the right, which was pretty cool. It blew my mind. I was like, yeah, that can't be real. And it's like, no. It's an older map. It's using an older map system. So if he updated it, he would lose that capability, and he doesn't want to. And I don't blame him. And I think it does. I think it does traffic cams as well, too, which is, I guess it's nice to know when a traffic cam is coming up, but that's got to, I don't know how often that changes, really, because they do those cams in fixed positions, and they don't mess with them. So we got to the restaurant, and it was like a 20, John gave him a certain number, and I guess maybe we went over, I'm not 100% sure. So we were at the bar for about 20 minutes hanging out and, you know, just talking, and so I had plenty of chance to talk to him, but then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, your table's ready. So there was like this musical chairs kind of scramble, and it was a long table, you know. And I wound up all the way at the other end opposite John, next to Dave, and one spot away from Tina on the other side. So I knew everybody. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like I didn't know any. I could have sat anywhere at the table. I know everybody. You know, it's going on 35 years. But the thing of it was, is I actually wanted to have more time to be able to talk to Gymnasium. But nobody, and he joked actually that we could have used our phones to text each other from different spots on the table, which would have been funny because we could have gotten that from home, not for nothing. But I did get to spend, I rode, it was a great meal, first of all, La Strada in Staten Island, awesome. I had the steak Siciliano again, which I had the last time I was there. And I actually gleaned from them that, yeah, it is the pepperoncinis. It's the one in the, you know, the pickled ones, basically. You know, the green pepperoncinis, the really hot peppers. For some reason, when I eat the dish, I don't taste the acid. So I hadn't presumed that it was those. But apparently it is. And there's also red cherry peppers in the sauce. So there's the sauce, and then they give you some pepperoncinis on the side as, like, garnish. I only ate one because it was, like, super high, you know. In better days, I could have eaten everything off the plate, not a problem. But I was scarfing down bread. Dave kept telling me, like, my dad, don't eat bread. You're not going to be hungry when your food gets here. And I kept telling him, shut up. And you know what? He was right. But I ate my steak. And I still don't know what cut it is. I know it's sirloin. And I know they asked me how I wanted it cooked. So when they don't ask you how you want a hot dog cooked. You know what I mean? So I'm presuming that it's a decent cut of sirloin. I just didn't know what. It's not like a strip steak that I could easily identify. And the basic thing is it's a piece of sirloin steak, and they sear it off, and then they coat it in friggin' breadcrumbs, and then they bake it with the sauce, and it's steak sauce. They call it steak Siciliano. And there, I've heard other variants of it, but it's really good. I ate my whole steak. I left the potatoes on the plate. I left some veggies on the plate, but I ate my whole steak. And then I had a cannoli, and I was really happy that they filled the cannoli shell after I had ordered it. It wasn't sitting there in the shell, so it didn't get all soft or squishy or anything like that, or moist even. It was nice crunch to the shell. I'm going to tackle doing those one of these days. I got to get the rings for them. And I had a single espresso, and it was good. And it was a great meal, and I actually, Dave was behaving himself, and I guess I was on good behavior. I didn't pick any fights with Dave. I was on good behavior. Dave was on good behavior. And he was good because he saw I was actually starting to freak out a little bit. So he was, you know, even... Everything okay? You okay over there? You know, and Tina knows my situation too, so she was cool as well too. So yeah, I talked to Tina, I talked to Dave, I talked to Andy. So I had, it wasn't like, and if I really needed to, I could have yelled over to the other side of the table. And Hank was there, and Alan Sane on one side, or actually it was Jackhammer, and then John at the head of the table, JL, and then next to him was Alan Sane, and then next to him was Gymnasium. So I wasn't that far off, but it was a long table. And there was a couple of times where I yelled over because I had a question or something. And the best part of the whole thing is, you know, while I wasn't in that main central hub, I guess I was acting in some sort of co-host situation with JL. I guess that's because, you know, I was a guest at his house and they were all guests to his house, which is not quite the same thing, I suppose. And I guess the groups broke up as well as you could be expected, considering, you know, how people arrived and that sort of thing. I was technically the only person who was alone. I didn't show up with someone, so it makes sense or whatever. But I still think it might have been a little bit of an ITAL conspiracy. I'm just going to leave it at that. But it went well. Dinner was great. We took our time. They didn't rush us. And it got less and less noisy and crowded, which made me happy, of course. And we rode back. I got back into the car with Gymnasium and Alan Sane and Jack Hammer. And we rode back to John's, you know, JL's, and we... parked right in front of the house. That worked out like really well. You know, got out of the car and got into the house, and people hung out for like another 3 hours or so. And really, it was nice. You know, John had plenty of Mexico, you know, and got a chance to talk to everybody. We took pictures, and people started to leave slowly. And Hank Hayes at one point says to me, well, what do you think about me coming by for the show tomorrow? And I was like, I'm fine with that. And, you know, if JL's fine with that, I'm fine. Are you kidding me? So he goes, yeah, all right, I'll check with him. So he checked with him, and it turned out that JL was like, yeah, because, you know, I was wondering what he was going to say, because I didn't want to go out of my way and say yes, definitely, because I know, JL was looking forward to having me and him there, just the two of us, because that happens now, like, you know, a couple of times a decade, and that's it, if we're lucky. So I didn't know if he wanted that space infringed upon. But it's Hank fucking Hayes, are you kidding? So that worked out nice. You know, people slowly left, and then everybody was gone except Gymnasium, and he hung out for about another hour. So I guess that kind of made up for not being able to talk at the restaurant. So, you know, he and I and JL, we shot the crap for a while, and then And then he headed his merry way. It was actually raining really hard when everybody else left. So it was almost like he got a chance to talk to him, but he was also waiting out the rain because it was raining something fierce out there. So he headed his merry way. And I made sure that he understood that he was, you know, more than welcome to come by tomorrow as well, too, you know, for the show on Sunday. But he has his own thing, his own little HR. No, I shouldn't say little. It's actually quite large compared to the 11L R&I network and its audience at this point in time. He had his own shop to mine, I guess would be the best way to put it. So he said, yeah, no, I understand, and he kind of left it at that, and he didn't show, and I didn't think he was going to, but Hank did. So I went to sleep that night with a full stomach, very pleased that I had gotten to see my my childhood idol, Gymnasium, with the glow. There was a glow, like an aura around him, man. and it was pretty cool. And I went to sleep, and then I don't even think we were up really that late. It was just such an exhausting experience, you know, not for nothing. It's just a sort of, like I said, just so many people, and there's so many, you know, I don't know, 8-9 people. But still, I mean, I hadn't seen Jack Hammer in, like, since I left New York. So that's a long time. So he and I had a lot of catching up to do. And, you know, I'm friends with everybody in that room on Facebook, you know, so it's not like, but it's not quite the same. I think those of you who have Facebook friends that you only see in person once in a while will certainly understand what I'm saying. So while I'm certainly following them through life because they document their lives pretty good on Facebook, it's not the same as sitting down with somebody and having a drink and saying, hey, what's going on? So it was great. I mean, whatever anxiety I'd had thus far about the subway and the difficulty of the trip, it kind of melted that night. I mean, even the weed thing was a little on the harrowing side. I mean, everything was great, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, like playing with a barrel of monkeys, and then all of a sudden the monkeys punch you in the face, and you're like, oh. So I was like, ooh. But no, it was awesome seeing people after not seeing them for a while. I mean, I was lucky enough to see Hank Hayes when he came back down from Boston in, I think it was August or whatnot, from one of the shoots that he did up there, which was awesome. I remember he had to cajole me to come out of the house. That was one of L.F. Midwood's darker periods, where he had to cajole me into coming out of the house. I wasn't coming. I'm not coming. I don't care. He goes, you're going to regret it. And I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. So I came out. And then, so we hit the sack, and I got up, and I slept in, which would mean for me to be at 1 o'clock or something. And when I got up and went downstairs, John was already working on the show. So whatever he had worked on Saturday, he was now working on other stuff. I mean, that guy's literally working on his show up until like an hour, half hour before his show. I mean, at least a half hour before the pregame. And it was a real good Christmas pregame, I think. It was so good that he put it up there with the show, and he doesn't normally do that. And it was, you know, and it's an interesting, it's exhausting and sometimes exasperating to be involved with his process, because he's like, oh, look at that. Listen to this. What do you think of that? What do you think? You know, so you're kind of going through it with him to a degree, to a lesser degree, but to a degree. And, he's just very intense. John's always been very intense, and I'm not that intense anymore. My intensity, you know, other than being scared crapless and having that axe murderer vibe, you know, and that's what that was. That wasn't my natural intensity. My natural intensity has pretty much been shot to shit because of the drugs, quite frankly. God honest truth, you know. And there were points in this trip where I honestly really did feel like that passenger that I refer to you as. But it didn't occur when I was interacting with the people who I came there to see, which I guess is really the most important thing. So he's working on a show, he's working on a show, he's working on a show. And then it gets to be like, I forget what time it was, but we check in with Hank, and Hank says he'll be by around 7-ish or whatever. And that's like a half hour before the pregame. So Hank comes in, and we sit down with Hank. And now I'm across, we had to run the microphones. Right? And now I'm sitting across from Hank Hayes. I don't know if I'd ever done anything with Hank Hayes. I'm trying to remember in all the years that I've done stuff, I don't know if I've ever actually done anything with Hank Hayes. As far as radio in the room, I never made it down to the Hot One. The Hot One was gone before I was cleared enough ever by security to be down there. So that wasn't the deal. And all the other stuff was pre-recorded, you know, as far as R&I and anything that would have been done after R&I. I tried to remember maybe one point with the shortwave when R&I first hit shortwave. I think I don't recall 100% clearly because there were so many people in that studio up in Randy's old place in Queens. I don't remember whether the HOT guys were there. I really honestly don't. I know Alan was. That much I can remember. But that was a long, long time ago. That had to be like 92. maybe 91, 92. So, you know, that's a lot of drugs to go, as they say. So it was a thrill. It was literally a thrill. And, you know, he does music. That's his Hank Music Haze, and there's another thing in there that I always forget. But anyway, and that's always, they latched on to the oldies early on in their pirate radio career, anyway, because they figured that sold. You know, people were interested in that. I know his political views are very close to mine, but we never really, and we've, you know, obviously discussed them at various length, at various times on Facebook, but we never got to do it in person. I think he always treads lightly. Let me tell you something. Hank Hayes is one of the most gracious people I know, period. And he always tends to tread lightly and see what the situation is, because he's smart like that. I think JL was expecting politics. And I think Hank Hayes was really a little gun-shy into the idea, you know, because he didn't know what the... But I think if you listen to the first hour of that show, I think you get a real good sense of his politics, of my politics, and certainly of John, meaning JL, having more than he possibly could have expected in regards to a clear and concise explanation as to why Hank Hayes and I feel the way we do. It almost makes up for all the times I listen to the Johnny Lightning Show and he's just bashing Trump, which is what he does. I mean, even when he's not being political, he bashes Trump. So, orange bad. No, JL's a little bit more advanced than that, but he's just still, it was an interesting hour. I haven't even listened to it yet. I'm savoring the idea of going back and hearing it again. I know I got stoned at the end of that show and was pretty much useless for most of the post game, because we did stay on with Hank, I think, for at least another hour or so after the show. And it was just a totally enjoyable experience, 100%. You know, JL and I spoke together for the first time, which was awesome. He got stoned, I got stoned, we got stoned on the air, it was awesome. I believe Hank had like a hit or two, and that was it. And Hank went on his way, and, you know, we started to clean up because it was midnight, 1 o'clock, I was tired, you know. Hit the sack, and then I got up in the morning late again, and then I wasn't feeling too well because I took a nap. Then I took a nap, and I got up. It was like 2:30, and I probably needed to leave at 3:30 to make all my connections, which I did. So I packed up my stuff and said my goodbyes to Mr. Lightning, and on a Monday afternoon, headed in the opposite direction of rush hour. And again, I think things went okay. I think I probably hit things at their least crowded, busiest, hectic time. I was an hour early at the bus station again, but it was worth it. I hung out. I got a little something to drink, and that was an express. It was only 3 hours to get home, and I tell you the truth, I was so tired and not feeling that great that I checked my bag under the bus. I walked onto the bus. I chose two empty seats. I rolled up my hoodie as a pillow against the window, and I fell asleep. And then the next thing I knew, the driver was announcing that we were pulling into Providence, the train station at Providence. I don't know why this is doing this, but again, fun experience. I definitely have to say that I would consider doing it again, but not anytime in the near future. I think it was really more about, one, I miss being home, believe it or not. You know, I miss the producer, I miss my cats. And I think it was more about, you know, people are getting older. I'm getting older. All those guys were older than me to begin with. I kind of maybe get the feeling that I'm not going to be able to do this forever. So that being the case, I kind of wanted to take advantage of the opportunity that we could. All right, I got one more Christmas song that I want to play that's like probably my favorite Christmas song. It's a cover of it. And I think who is this? Let's see. See, this is Bowling for Soup, supposedly, but we'll see. I'm not 100% sure because I wasn't 100% due diligent in doing my backup on I recorded stuff, and I didn't even think about titles. I wasn't going to do titles, and I said, there's so few of them, why don't I just do it? So, I ask you, as always, to come by the Midwood Files. That's lfmidwood.com. You'll find archives, my social media, links to my favorite places, links to John Lightning's site right over there, 11LRNI. You can contact me. Oops, over here. Contact me by hitting that and getting a little contact form. Or you can email me directly at lfmidwood@lfmidwood.com. That's lfmidwood@lfmidwood.com. As always, you know, questions, criticisms, death threats, all that stuff is welcome. I'll be back here same time next week, which will eventually, or I think inevitably, be my last show of the year for 2018. Probably going to yammer a little bit on that one, too. And then get back to some sort of semi-soft journalism back in the beginning of 2019 there. But we'll see. Well, it depends on how I feel. And I have been feeling okay. I don't feel great, but I've been feeling okay, for those of you who are wondering. Just a lot taken out of me with the trip. And then walking right into the producer. She was in the hospital for a day, 2 days actually. She's home now. She's moving around pretty good, but it's going to take time for her to get up to full speed. So I got stuff that I need to do around here that I wasn't doing before, which is probably good for me anyway. And mostly things are okay here. I mean, you know, vehicle update, we're looking at probably by the second week of January, so I'm still looking at 3 weeks, God forbid, a month, before I'm looking at some new old wheels. But it's going to be a decent new old car. It's not going to be a junky new old car, so that's good news. And that's it. So let me play this set, and I'll get out of here, and I'll see y'all next week. Thanks. Oh, see, I forgot to pop that up. Okay, let's try this.
Been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.